From the studios of Boise State Public Radio News, I'm Gemma Gaudette. This is Idaho Matters. As the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention reports a rise in pertussis across the United States, here in Idaho, we're seeing an outbreak in the northern part of the state, and Boise State University almost had to cancel their home opener football game to an outbreak on the opposing team. Dr. David Pate, former CEO of St. Luke's Health System and co-author of the book Preparing for the Next Global Outbreak, joins us now to talk more about this. Hi, Dr. Pate.
Hi, Gemma.
And remember, folks, if you have a public health question, send us an email at idahomatters@boisestate.edu. So, Dr. Pate, we literally talked about pertussis, less than 2 weeks ago. And shortly after, a college football game was actually canceled because of an outbreak. So before we get to all of that, though, just quickly remind us what pertussis, or it's better known as whooping cough, is.
You're right. So whooping cough or pertussis is an infection caused by a bacteria that is highly transmissible if you're in close contact with someone. Typically, this is spread by coughing, sneezing, or even just normal breathing if you're in the same room with the person for a period of time through what we call respiratory droplets. And this infection may start out and seem like someone's got a cold. It can actually be hard to distinguish this from influenza, COVID, a number of things. But what happens is that, especially in very young children, babies and infants, about a week or so after the onset of these kinds of symptoms, the child may develop a very troublesome cough that leads to coughing fits, followed by a whooping noise when they make a series of coughs, and then it's like they're trying to take in a deep breath, and you hear this whooping sound, which gives the disease its name. That whooping is not common in older children and adults who get this, but it can be a real danger to especially these young babies and infants because their airways haven't developed well, and this bacteria binds to cells that have hair-like structures that help clear our mucus, and so it can be a trouble clearing secretions. Also, the toxin it produces causes swelling of the throat, and so children may have trouble breathing even, and young babies may not get the whoop. They may just actually have periods where they stop breathing, so it can be quite serious.
Okay, so with that said, I have to say, Dr. Pate, I don't remember a college football game ever being canceled because of a whooping cough outbreak. And we should note, this was what? Portland State was going to be playing, was it South Dakota or North Dakota?
South Dakota, you're right.
And the game got canceled because of an outbreak at Portland State. Why is this so noteworthy?
Exactly. Well, I think the point you said, I too don't have a memory of that ever happening. Typically, by the time, so we're talking about college, so we're usually talking about kids that are now young adults, they're 18, maybe up to 22, 23 years old or so. By that time, not only should they have had the routine set of immunizations that include coverage for this, but they should have gotten a booster. The CDC is reporting now, when I wrote a blog on this last week, we were seeing three times the number of cases that we had seen last year already at this point in the year of whooping cough. It is now four times that amount. And the CDC is saying that they have evidence that a lot of what is drawing this is that since the pandemic, fewer people have gotten these routine immunizations and the protections against these very contagious diseases. And if you've ever been in a football locker room, you know that these People are in very close contact. And so if somebody's going to get it and others are susceptible, it's going to spread like wildfire. And certainly when they have this illness, you do not want these people exercising vigorously. Mm-hmm. That could be a real serious problem. So it's not surprising the game got canceled. It's just surprising that we generally don't see outbreaks among college teams. So I thought it particularly caught my attention.
Right. I agree with that. So let's then talk about what's going on up in North Idaho, because they have an outbreak going on up there.
They do. And the past years, I think if you look at the panhandle of Idaho, so that's where Panhandle Health District is. I think they reported for the past 3 years, 5 cases in total. They now, the number escapes me, but my recollection is something on the order of they've already had more than 160 cases, something like that. So quite a dramatic increase in cases in northern Idaho. And this is, while most older children and adults, this will just be a very unpleasant illness and they'll recover. The real risk is when these people get it and very likely may not know they have it at the point they're exposing other people. And now they're around a family with a new baby, or they're around kids that are have other health problems, asthma, other breathing problems, those kind of things, and they're exposing them. And that's where we could see the real toll of this is on these babies, infants, and young children that have particularly already troublesome breathing problems.
So Dr. Pate, bottom line is folks should be checking to see what their kids' immunizations look like and if they're up to date. But what about,
that's right.
You know, So what about then like kids in college, right? Or even maybe high school kids. I mean, looking back to what happened with this football team, to see if they're updated, I would think, on their immunizations as well.
You would hope that colleges would be checking immunization records. And you would think that a football team, I mean, for example, the loss of that game for Portland State, I don't know how much revenue that cost them, but it's probably not insignificant. And you would think it'd be worth checking to make sure that your players were up to date on immunizations, providing them if they weren't, because you don't want your players getting sick, even if they're going to recover. Yes, I think we need more attention paid to this. And I also just don't think we can say enough about how damaging it has been that there are people, especially on social media, spreading just outright lies, disinformation, misinformation that is discouraging people from getting vaccines. And this will cost us in terms of people's health, some people's lives. It's a dangerous matter. We really need to focus attention on it. We need the community to help us and to get up to date if you've gotten behind on vaccines.
And Dr. Pate, you've been trying over the past 4 years to continue to inform people of the added risk of continued COVID-19 infections. And you recently wrote in your blog about 2 studies that have come out around long COVID. What did they find?
Yeah, and this is something I've been trying to warn about. It's been difficult because we're just getting an onslaught of studies now studying this. But I've tried to warn from the beginning, and you'll remember that in the very first part of the pandemic, of course, we were worried about people getting seriously ill and dying, but our focus should have shifted to wanting to prevent infections for all, because as I've said many times, it's not just a matter of ending up in the hospital and dying. There are lots of long-term health consequences from these infections. And we're really just now getting our hands around some of this. And so what I wrote about was just two of many studies. The first was a study that could not be done in the United States because in the United States, we consider it unethical to expose healthy people to a potentially dangerous bacteria or virus. But in another country, this study was allowed. And what they did is they took 34 volunteers that had no knowledge of having had COVID. So this was at the end of the first year and into 2021 that they had not, to their knowledge, been exposed, not had COVID, and had not been vaccinated. And they checked blood tests to see that they make sure they didn't have antibodies. And so these 34 individuals were given the live SARS-CoV-2 virus inoculated up their nose. Now, not everybody will get infected. It may not be a high enough dose to infect some people. And out of the 34, and these were people that were 18 to 30 years old, so not old people like me. And what happened is 18 of them did get infected. 17 had mild illness, and they were symptomatic. One didn't get any symptoms, but they could test him and see that he was infected. What they did is they followed them through the illness and for at 3-month intervals for a year. And what they noted is every single one who got infected showed cognitive decline compared to their baseline and compared to the group that did not get infected. And these were things like memory, reasoning, planning, those kinds of things that we can test for. And they all had measurable decreases. Now, interestingly, none of these young people perceived that they were having a problem, but it showed up consistently on tests up to a year. And the other study was in people with long COVID, because we know that a frequent symptom of folks with long COVID is what they call brain fog. And what they found is that people who had long COVID had a decline in their IQ of at least 3 points. And with more persisting symptoms of brain fog, it was a higher number of points. I think it was 7 points of decline. And with those that had initially been seriously ill, it was 9 points of IQ decline. So what we know is that this virus can affect the brain, and we have mechanisms both direct and indirect. But my point being that there are other consequences that we may or may not be aware of, and we shouldn't take infections lightly. That doesn't mean you live in a bubble, but it means you just take reasonable precautions to minimize your chances. And then the other thing they showed is that if these folks got reinfected, they got additional IQ points decline, I believe another 2 points with each reinfection. So we just need to be, it doesn't mean we have to live in a bubble, as I said, but maybe a little bit more precaution.
And Dr. Payne, I want to talk next about this continued nationwide shortage of certain types of medications that are specifically used to treat ADHD. It's a certain classification of medication. So again, there are certain, every state has different laws and regulations around these types of medications. And so here in Idaho, for folks who may not be aware, these certain class of medications, you can only have a 30-month supply. A lot of times when you fill up a prescription, you get a 3-month supply, not with these. And you cannot fill this prescription until you're about 2 to 3 days out from needing a new prescription. With this nationwide shortage, and my family is in this situation, is you call the pharmacy, you see if they have it. Our home pharmacy, I don't know the last time they had it. So then we have to go try to find another pharmacy. And I'm literally driving all over the Treasure Valley to get this medication. We have 2 minutes left, Dr. Pate, and I am curious to know if there are any updates to this issue, because every single time I call, my poor pharmacist is like, there's a nationwide shortage. And I'm like, I realize this. It's been going on for a very long time. And I know I am not the only person in this boat.
You are not, and it is very frustrating. And of course, if you have spent any time around these children when they're off their medications, as I have, you get worn out pretty quick. So it is a serious problem, and especially during the school year when they need to be focused and concentrating. Yes, it is a nationwide shortage, and unfortunately, it is predicted to continue to be so for at least another year, possibly longer. Here's the deal. The problem is these are controlled substances, just as you've mentioned, and they are controlled because they are subject to abuse. And we have had instances where even manufacturing companies have engaged in abuse. There were some big headlines years ago people may know of. But anyway, as a consequence, the FDA regulates how they distribute the ingredients to who and how much they give. And they try to project this a year ahead. But what has happened since COVID is the demand for these medications has gone up about triple. And so the FDA has been behind, but they've been increasing it every year. Also, it's complicated because people are maybe on a specific brand, specific dose. Some kids are on short acting, some are on long acting. All of these ingredients have to be distributed among all the different pharmacies that make those various things. And one pharmacy may make more of one formulation than what the public is trying to get, and another not enough. And it's just an ongoing challenge, but maybe next year it'll be better.
All right. Well, I appreciate that update. I'm sure a lot of other parents and caregivers do as well. We will muddle through. As always, Dr. Pate, thank you so much for taking time to speak with us today.
My pleasure.
Thanks so much for listening to Idaho Matters. Boise State Public Radio and Idaho Matters are members of the NPR Network. It's an independent coalition of public media podcasters. You can find more shows in the network wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Gemma Gaudette. We'll see you tomorrow.
The candidates for November are set.
I know Donald Trump's type.
Between now and Election Day.
We are not going back.
A campaign season unfolding faster.
Kamala Harris is not getting a promotion.
Than any in recent history.
Make America great again.
Follow it all with new episodes every weekday on the NPR Politics Podcast.